Good evening. For those of you who I haven't met, my name's Sean. I lead the youth ministry here. Well done for making it out in the middle of the Christmas break. I know for me it was hard to move off the sofa after 4 days of pretty much being glued to that and Netflix. I wonder what suffering looks like, you know, start big there, suffering looks like for middle class Surrey. I wonder how many of you in here are on a Facebook group, something maybe like Ashton Parents or Ashton Unhinged. No? I know a couple of you are because I've seen your comments. Or whether you follow a Twitter account or a Facebook account called Very British Problems. This Twitter account has now had a spin-off TV show and board game, which I have, if anyone wants to borrow. And it tries to capture what it is really like to be British and to really suffer. So I wanted to show you a couple of examples of what these might be. Have a read of this. How to answer a phone. Stop one, stare at it until it stops ringing. Step two, text the person and ask them, sorry, did you just call? If the person immediately rings again after step two, consider blocking their number. Maybe others of you have experienced this one over Christmas, the problem with board games. A couple of types of board gamers on there. I wonder which one you identify as. Perhaps you are the cheat. When I was younger, I regularly stole from the banker in Monopoly. Or perhaps you're that parent who is trying to keep everything jolly and stopping siblings from killing each other. Or how about this one? This is definitely how I felt very recently. And I don't know if any of you felt this over Christmas. I'm so full. More food, please. To bring that to an end, this is a clip from the TV show Very British Problems.
This time, I'm afraid we're going to have to talk about the very thing the British are worst at talking about. Our feelings.
Even asking someone how they are, that's fraught with pitfalls and perils. No one actually wants to know.
If you ever ask someone how they are and they're not very good, it becomes very uncomfortable. Hey, how you doing? I'm not too good at the moment. Well, yeah, apart from that, are you all right? No, I'm not all right. Well, apart from that, everything's been good. No, I'm very sick at the moment. Well, apart from that, have you been well?
How are you? Well, what? What's wrong with you? Why are you telling me how you are? I didn't ask. I mean, I did ask, but you know I didn't mean it.
So there we go. The fact that everything is not always good is what we get a chance to look at today. So I'd love you, if you could, to open your Bibles or your apps to Matthew chapter 2. I don't know how I ended up preaching on this passage here tonight, but it's the part of the Christmas story that is, for some unknown reason, glazed over in all the Christmas services. As you can see, the title, The Holy Innocents, is something I'd not even heard of until this was presented to me as the idea of a title. And this is the very jolly story of Herod killing children. Yep, you came out for a nice light evening. But we're going to try and make this really relevant to us today. So let's read it together. So this is Matthew chapter 2, starting at verse 13. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said. Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. Right. So, I want to start with Herod. Herod the Great, he was known as, and considering this story and all the other things we know as Christians from what we read in Scripture, we would probably not call Herod the Great. But he was one figure from the ancient world that we have probably more primary evidence from original sources than any others, even more than Jesus, even more than Julius Caesar, even more than Caesar Augustus, who called the census that Joseph and Mary were going to register at. Herod the Great was actually, by the time standards, a successful politician. He kept the peace with the Roman occupation. He rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem. But his personal life portrays him as what he can only quite frankly be described as a bit of a maniac. If you think your family Christmas was tough, imagine, first of all, having 10 wives with all the associated in-laws. And imagine also that you're king and that those wives have given birth to princes. And all those princes are fighting for your throne. That was the type of family that Herod was living in. It was competitive beyond belief. Because of that, Herod killed 3 of his own sons because he accused them of treason. He killed his favourite wife. He killed the high priest of Jericho, a couple of uncles, some cousins, and a partridge in a pear tree. Not exactly a family man. He even plotted to arrest and kill all the Jewish leaders because he knew that the Jewish people didn't like him and that when he died that people were going to celebrate. So his idea was to kidnap and then kill all the Jewish leaders when he died so that people would be crying when he died. That's the sort of twisted maniac that Herod was. And I can only imagine that after sending the wise men to go and to visit this baby who was going to be king and then return to him to tell him so that he too could pay homage, that he was a little bit upset. He was hoping to prevent this kingly rival at the very beginning, but hearing that the wise men went home another way would only have increased his suspicion and his jealousy. So there are three things in life that I think we should expect and that I'm going to try and take out of this passage. So the first thing is to expect suffering. Jesus tells all of us that we will face trials. We can't ignore this horrendous passage in the Bible, and nor should we as Christians try to apologize for its existence. It's there. And you know what? This brutality exists around the world today. If I just take a look at today's headlines, we see the Islamic State who have accused and beheaded 10 Christians in Nigeria. We see 5 people stabbed at a Jewish celebration in New York. We see a pregnant woman among more than 30 victims of people trafficking rescued from the Channel. Then there's the suffering in our own lives that we all have to deal with, whether that's losing a job, losing a family member, losing a friend, whether that's to illness or even moving away. We all suffer in our own ways. But we need to make sure that in that suffering, we find perspective. And it means that when we're in a good place, that we don't downplay the suffering of others. That we don't wipe mental health to one side just as a millennial buzzword. That we don't treat loneliness as just an excuse of an elderly generation. It means that when we are suffering, we need to be aware that others might not understand what we're going through. And that others might also be suffering in ways that we don't know. And if we look at the character of Herod, may I be as bold to suggest that he had serious, serious mental health issues. And we shouldn't, like Herod, take our sufferings out on other people. As we think about perspective, let's take Herod and try and get a bit of perspective on this whole idea of how he murdered all the boys under the age of 2 in Bethlehem. Now, in our heads, we're imagining that Herod has slaughtered so many hundreds of children. But what we're forgetting is that this was 2,000 years ago, and Bethlehem probably equivalent to a small village today of about 1,500 people. The closest place to that I could find that was relative to that size is Stoke Dabnon or West Clandon, not even East Clandon. Combine that with the huge infant mortality rate at that time, that's the rate at which children would have died before they reached even their first birthday. And when we're talking about the deaths of all the children under the age of 2, what we're probably talking about is about 15 children. And I'm not saying that makes the whole thing any less of a tragedy, but like in our own lives, we should never see our own suffering as less important to God than someone else's. God is always there with us through every sort of suffering, no matter how big, no matter how small. No matter how small it in particular seems to other people's sufferings. So, we should expect suffering. We should also expect safety. God called on Joseph in a dream to flee from the things that were going to do them harm. Now, this was to fulfill one of the many prophecies about Jesus, which if you've got a Bible or even on the app, it's marked there. It's a prophecy from Isaiah. Joseph, Mary, and Jesus, our holy family, had no idea that danger was even coming. If the angel hadn't have visited Joseph, they wouldn't have even known that this was part of Herod's plan. And God not only warned them what was going on, he didn't tell them just of the danger, but he told them how to get out of it. He told them about the solution. And I wonder what that's like in our own lives, what our dangers are, what our safety is. Now, I've got a confession to make that over the last few days, I've been very sinful. I'm expecting a pantomime groan of some sort there, but I was reading this proverb. Laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Now, I have to refute this passage because I would agree that laziness, if you're on the sofa for a while, does cast one into a deep sleep. But over the last few days, I've certainly not suffered any hunger. There is so much food within reach of my sofa. It's incredible. I don't know what it's like in your household, but the abundance of Christmas biscuits, crisps, snacks, and chocolate is an absolute abundance. I know that's not what this proverb is probably talking about, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with resting. But there are other areas in our lives that I know that you and I will struggle with. And in all those, God lets us know that the danger is there, and he provides a route to safety, but quite often we ignore him. Whether the danger is the occasional temptation to get drunk, whether it's your struggle with pornography addiction, your constant anxiety, and whether the route to safety is letting someone else do the grocery shopping, making sure you're not in the house alone, or finally booking that doctor's appointment. If we can learn from what Joseph did and how he reacted, he got up straight after his dream and fled in the night, reacting to God's warning and solution straight away. God doesn't want us to suffer. He's walking alongside us, trying to point the way to safety. So we should expect suffering. We should expect safety. And finally, we should expect salvation. If you read one of the footnotes in this passage, it relates to Jeremiah 31:15, this passage about there being weeping because of what's happened. But if I read further into that passage, in Jeremiah 31, verses 16 and 17, it says this. This is what the Lord said. Restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes for tears, for your work will be rewarded, declares the Lord. They will return from the land of the enemy, so there is hope for your descendants, declares the Lord. Your children will return to their own land. I believe that there is hope in every single piece of suffering. And salvation is so much more than just our physical safety, which is why I've listed it differently. Salvation is knowing that ourselves, our souls, are saved from our own sins, the things that we do wrong, and all of the consequences of those sins, all the consequences of the things we do wrong, the consequences for ourselves, the consequences for other people. Salvation means that we are saved from it if we enter into a relationship with Jesus. That salvation existed for the very first baby boy murdered at Herod's hand, arguably the first of many who would die for Christ. That salvation for us starts with the birth of Jesus that we talked about so much at Christmas. And it concludes with his death and his resurrection that we are about to remember at communion tonight. God isn't against us. That's not what suffering is all about. God is for us. He tells us to expect the suffering. But he also tells us that he's a place where we can expect safety. And we know that because of what Jesus did, we can expect salvation. We're going to sing a song later that has these words. Free at last, he has ransomed me. His grace runs deep. while I was a slave to sin, Jesus died for me. Before we approach communion, I would like to invite you to just close your eyes for a moment, just where you are. And as we think through those three points of expecting suffering, expecting safety, and expecting salvation, my guess is that the first point is really easy to put something by. We all have those niggles that we know we're going to face. If not today, then when we go back to work or school a week on Monday. But what about the safety? What is it that God might be calling you to? What might God be providing for you? It was important for Joseph to be listening to God, to be looking out for God. For Joseph, it was in a dream. For you, it might be a small word. It might be an action of somebody else. It might be a situation. It might be a word on the telly. And then remember as well that because of Jesus, we get salvation. No matter what we're doing or what we've done wrong.